Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Now, Javier Del Pozo was just 40 when he died, leaving his wife Anne and their toddler daughter Elizabeth. That was 3.5 years ago, and since then, Anne has gone on her own journey with grief and healing, and she joins me in studio now. Well, Anne, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about Javi then. Where did you guys meet?
So we met online on Plenty of Fish. I'm not even sure if that's even used anymore. And we met in June 2016. And we moved quite fast because we were older when we met. I think, looking back, I think we were 36. So that was June 2016. March 2017, we moved in together. We were engaged in October 2017. We got married October 2018. And then we had Elizabeth in May of 2020.
And the thing is, though, as they say, when you know, you know. Absolutely. Sometimes it just becomes something. I certainly know with my own husband, we just knew once we got together that that's where it was going. As well as the biological clock, you just think, well, what would we be waiting for?
Absolutely.
And did you know that from the first meeting, or did it become evident after a few dates?
I know, it was a slow burn, I would say. So it was really January of 2017 that we got really serious. And then he wanted to move in straight away. I'm like, slow down. So I held him off till March 2017 and we got an apartment together. And that was the real test to see if it could be something long term. And it obviously was. We had a great time together. We travelled a lot and we had lots of fun.
And I didn't give it the accent because I thought that would be a bit cringe. But it's clear from his name, perhaps, that he's Spanish. Yeah. So did that play anything into your decisions? You know, that obviously he had family further away, or, you know, that it was a bit cool that he was Spanish, you know, did it all feed into the one?
Absolutely. It was very cool. He was Spanish. So he was from a town called Segovia, which is an hour outside Madrid. It is a beautiful town. And the first time I went there to meet his parents, I said to him, I don't know if I'm going to marry you, but I'm getting married in Segovia. And we did.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, we had a gorgeous wedding.
And what brought him to Ireland?
It was work. So he was finding it hard to get work in Spain. He was a forestry engineer by education and he ended up being an environmental engineer over here. And he went to do an internship, I think in 2012, and he stayed in that company right up to the end. He never moved. He absolutely loved it.
And you wanted to have a family, and Elizabeth was born, as you said, in 2020. So that was during the pandemic. So were you impacted by any of the stuff that was going on? Was Javi able to be with you in the labour ward?
So it was only when it was active labour. So I was actually brought in on Wednesday for induction, and that failed twice. So it was Friday at 10:30 when he was allowed into the birthing suite because they broke my waters. And he was there with me for the day. We've actually a video that he took of the room because he was so just curious about everything. And it was 7:30 that night that she arrived. And an hour later, he had to go home. And then we didn't see him again until Monday when I was discharged with Elizabeth.
I was even thinking, you know, writing up my questions for our chat about how you just get reminders every now and then about how difficult all that was. Mm-hmm. And in particular, the maternity side. I mean, you said induction didn't work a couple of times. Mm-hmm. It's not surprising. I mean, you're adding stress onto even more stress. You want your partner there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was my first baby as well. So, you know, I was a bit scared. I remember crying myself to sleep the second night that I was there because I was so disappointed that it didn't start. So he wasn't allowed in. And I just wanted him beside me and he wanted to be there and he couldn't be.
Yeah, tough times. Mm. But look, nothing was going to overshadow the birth of your gorgeous little girl, Ellie. I call her
Ellie. Yeah. 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 But she introduces herself as Elizabeth.
Okay.
Yeah. Very important.
How posh.
Yeah.
And she became the light of your life and the centre of your world. But it was only a very short time after she was born that Javi had his first seizure.
Yeah. So I say to people, I had everything I ever wanted in life for 12 days. And on the 13th day, it all changed. So the 1st of May is when she was born. And the 13th of May is when he had a seizure. So we woke up that morning not feeling well. I thought he was getting COVID because it was COVID times. Gave him a paracetamol, got him to go back to bed. And I went upstairs to get my breast pump. And he looked like he was having a stroke. and I had to call an ambulance, and he was taken into hospital without me because of COVID. So I didn't know what hospital he was going to. It was actually the army that were in the ambulance. It wasn't a normal EMTs. It was a very scary time. And up to that, because of COVID, my parents hadn't held Elizabeth, and they were all of a sudden in my house holding her because I was on the phone to the hospital trying to figure out what was going on. And I can't remember if it was later that day or the next day that he called me and he said, they've done a CT scan and they found a tumour on my brain. And I was just trying to reassure him. They let me in to see him then because, you know, you can't get that news. Well, he got that news on his own, but he can't deal with that news on his own. So I was allowed in the next day for an hour, and I was allowed in, I think, one more time. He was in Tallaght Hospital, then he was moved to Beaumont, and he had brain surgery on his own. That was the 20th of May. And then it was the 26th he was discharged. And then we had 2 weeks of a wait before we had a diagnosis. And that day was really weird. Like, they didn't say terminal, and that word never really entered my brain for a long time. But they kept telling me not to Google the diagnosis. So it was glioblastoma multiforme, which is, it's called GBM. It's a grade 4 brain tumour. And we were saying, like, is it cancer? Because they just kept saying different words and they never said the word cancer. And the doctor said yes. And then, you know, they said not to Google it, but treatment will start straight away. So I, like, we were there, you know, just in shock. And like a week later, we were in St. Luke's getting radiation. But before the radiation started, we had a phone consultation with the radiotherapist. And he said, you know, like, Javi was really liked details. He liked to know what he was facing. And he said to the said to him on the phone, you know, what am I looking at here? Like, what's the prognosis? He's like, oh, about 18 months. And he's like, what, 18 months for it to come back? He's like, no, 18 months to live. And that was just shocking. Like, we couldn't. I still can remember sitting at the table and getting that news because it was on speakerphone and just couldn't believe what I was hearing.
And we just have to bear in mind that you also had a very small baby in the middle of all of this, a time where you should have been having your life turned upside down by that and, you know, the roller coaster that brings. But to have this as well. I mean, was it really hard for you to get your head around, not only because it is such a shock, but was Javi in good health up until then?
Absolutely. Like, he was a bit tired. Like, when I look back at it now, he was kind of, like, I remember we did a prenatal course online and he was asleep beside me. And I just thought that was hilarious.
Yeah.
I took a picture of him. But, like, I think that might have been a sign.
Yeah.
Like, he was just really, we had a couple of near misses in the car. And I was just thinking, oh, he's really stressed about becoming a first time dad. And, you know, he's fine. But I think they were all markers of that he wasn't okay. But the focus was rightly on me because I was having a baby. And so it just got missed. But there was never anything huge that had happened that would make me think, oh, you know, there's something really wrong here.
So how did you both navigate that news that you had possibly 18 months together? It turned out to be 16 in the end.
16 months, yeah, yeah. So we just said, you know, no matter what happens, we're going to be there for each other. And I have to say, our love really deepened in that time. And COVID turned into a gift because we were so, you know, the three of us were in a bubble, like literally a bubble, together. And we had so much time together. And I was obviously on maternity leave as well, even if it wasn't COVID, to bring him to all of his appointments and, you know, look after him. Like, the thing I struggled with was actually the balance of being a new mother and looking after him. Because all of a sudden it was like I had two children because, you know, he had to have my focus because he was so sick. And, you know, it was a very difficult time, but we just tried to stay as positive as we could. And we were there for each other. But we had some conversations in that time about if we just said if the worst happened, and that was code for if he died and what we would do. And, you know, like things like Elizabeth has a Spanish passport that was really important to him. So I've kept her Spanish passport in date and visiting his family. He really wanted her to know his side of the family and to know him. And, you know, before 2016 when I met him. So we go over to Spain 3 times a year. I'm so lucky to have his family. They're so, like, they just love me like one of their own. And they love that I go over there and we spend time with them. So, and not every widow would have that special relationship with the other side of the family. And I feel really lucky that I have them, because it's a part of him that I still have.
And how did he manage all of this? Because it must have been so difficult for him, you know, obviously with you and with the rest of his life, but especially with Elizabeth, to know he was almost on a countdown. Mm. I mean, it's interesting as you say it, you know, I'm sort of getting goosebumps in a way, because we're all told tomorrow isn't promised. We should all really be living in this way. And I know it's not possible when we're going to work and kids are going to school and things are kicking off, but we should really be in our lives, because nobody knows how long we have with the people we love.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the way he dealt with it was, he was amazing. He never complained. Like, he had so much treatment, so many MRIs. Like, he had 2 brain surgeries. He'd one in May and then the second one in February of 2021 because the treatment didn't work. And then he was on another treatment, and that was intravenous. Like, he was just a pincushion at one stage. And we made the decision in July of 2021 that we would move to Spain. And that was very hard. And I think, looking back, if Elizabeth wasn't a newborn, we would have done it much earlier. But COVID, you know, everything altogether was just a mix. We just couldn't, and I couldn't do it. But yeah, when we went to Spain, like, he was very sick. Like, he was in a wheelchair, you know, and I was the one that was his primary carer. I was the one that he relied on and he trusted. So we went to an oncologist over in Spain. He was actually, he's known kind of throughout Europe for glioblastoma. And he said in that room that day, he says, there's nothing more we can do. And I asked, like, what does that mean? Like, how much time do we have? And he said, probably only about 2 weeks. And I remember I had my mask on, crying, saying, you know, how can that be? Like, our daughter is only 15 months old. How can that be true? And Javi, being the amazing person that he was just holding my hand and looking at me and making sure I was okay. It was never about him. He was always outward, making sure Elizabeth was okay, making sure I was okay. So after that, you know, we went back to the apartment in Madrid, and he wrote cards for Elizabeth. So I have ones for when she's 16, 18, and if she gets married. And, you know, just to keep his memory alive. And she says now, she's 4 and a half, and she would say to me that she feels like she knows him, because we're always looking at videos. We're always talking about him. My family, my friends, I'm so lucky to have the people around me, because they allow space for him all the time. We even have a place for him at the Christmas dinner table. Like, we include him in everything. And I talk about him multiple times a day.
Yeah. And why wouldn't you? And what incredible love you both shared, especially to experience something so difficult like that. And for, as you say, for it to deepen your love. But it must have been very difficult after he died. What do you remember about that time?
So the thing that surprised me the most was, although I knew it was terminal and I know that I knew he was going to die, I was in shock for, I'd say, at least a year, because I think your brain doesn't allow you to process things all at once. It's kind of piecemeal, you know, we're going through this day and, you know, this, the next treatment, and maybe the next, you know, maybe he'll be okay. But I was in Spain and I stayed there with, my mom had stayed over with me for a couple of weeks with Elizabeth, and we travelled home with her. And I remember just wanting to start my new life, just rip the Band-Aid off. My mom was like, stay in our house for a few days. I agreed to one night. And then the day after we flew home from Spain, myself and Elizabeth went back to the house, and I walked through the door, and that was the start of my new life. At that time, I lived in Rathfarnham. I actually moved house last year to be closer to my parents, but I just needed to be where he was, and I needed to know that I could do this on my own. it wasn't perfect by any stretch, and geez, I don't have memories of a lot of it. It was like a dark cloud was over me for months, and I just felt it was on my face that I'd lost him. So I tell everybody, I'd be in a taxi and I'd be like, oh, by the way, my husband died. And I just wanted to talk about it all the time.
And I mentioned at the introduction of the show that I was having you on to talk about setting up a widows group, because you did find that even though you had amazing support of your friends and family, that when you went looking, there wasn't really something there. You were kind of taking, you had to get a jigsaw of things. Mm-hmm. And that's why you wanted to set up this group. So what did you feel was missing? Was it because you were such a young widow at 40?
Yeah, and like I'm actually in a widows group now, and they would be, majority of them have grown up kids and grandkids. So they're at a different stage of life to me. And they're brilliant for going out to concerts and things, but I wouldn't be available to go to a lot of things because obviously I'm parenting on my own. And what helped me during my grief journey has been Reiki. So myself and Javi had Reiki while he was sick. I continued when he passed away. And then my Reiki healer said to me that she'd like me to train to be a Reiki practitioner myself. So I did. I did the breathwork teacher training as well. And just connections, going to women's circles and talking. But there's such power in speaking to somebody who has lost their partner and they just understand. There's less explaining to do and they just get it. So what I'm setting up is about it. You know, it's talking, it's connection. But I'm also going to be doing some Reiki on people. We'll be doing some breath work together. And I'm just combining everything that helped me and giving it to them and hoping that it'll help. You know, we carry a lot as widows. It's not just the person you lose. It's the future you thought you were going to have. Like myself and Javi used to talk all the time about plans. We wanted to move to Spain. We wanted to have a second child. And all of that is gone. I won't grow old with him now. But also along with that, you have all the responsibilities. So, you know, from putting out the bins to like making sure the bills are paid, you know, the child, everything for Elizabeth is my decision on my own. And it's a lot of pressure and it's all the time. So I want to invite people in to the community centre that I'm going to be holding in Rialto to just put the load down for 2 hours and just sit, honour themselves. I'm asking them to bring a photo of their loved one with them because I want them to honour the person as well, because we wouldn't be here without them. So like I often say, if Javi hadn't have lived and died, I wouldn't be doing this work. So I feel like he's with me when I'm doing it. And that's really special.
So you are going to have them once a month in Rialto and Dublin, as you said, but it is something you want to grow. Yeah. Obviously, you're starting with widows,
yeah.
But all you want to grow it out to grief groups and
yeah.
have this holistic space, hold space for people where they can connect with others and take that intentional time for themselves on their own journey.
Yeah. So there's two things that I want to do. The one that I want to do most, I'm really passionate about, is actually create a space for children that have lost a parent. There is so little support, and especially for Elizabeth at her age. Like there's organisations called Rainbows, but they only deal with kids from 7. And they exclude some children. So they exclude children who have lost their parent through suicide, which I think is awful, because that is a type of loss that is so complicated that the child needs that support. They need to be held. And for them to be excluded from something like that, I just think is wrong. So I want to create a space in the community centre that I'm holding the grief circles, because they're an amazing place, just to have kids come in. And it's not going to be, you know, I'll do breath work with them, but it's going to be more about, like, I might read them a story, you know, like The Invisible String, for example, just about loss, and just let them see I'm not the only one. You know, like Elizabeth has lost her dad and this person has lost her mom or whatever it is. And just for them to feel like they have a little community there. Not everybody can afford play therapy, and that seems to be the only consistent support you can get for kids. So I want something really affordable and accessible for people to have.
Well, I was watching a video on your Instagram of Ellie, of Elizabeth, and she is a shining light. She is clearly thriving. What about you, Anne? How are you these days?
I feel good since I'm setting up these groups. I feel like I've found a new purpose, and it feels like it's brought some light into my life that I'm helping other people, and why I'm helping other people. You know, I'm doing it because of what I've gone through with Javi, which was very difficult. Like I find, like parenting Elizabeth is very easy. She's an absolute joy of a little girl. But I do find it's difficult, you know, it takes a village, and that's why we moved closer. Like I'm only 10-minute walk from my parents, and my sister and my brother are close by too. So having that extra support is really important, and I feel like I'm getting more of a life as well. I'm you know, joining book clubs and, you know, able to go out because people can babysit for me much easier.
Well, good for you. And I think what you're doing is absolutely incredible, as are you. Where can people find you?
So my Instagram is AnneBurnCoaching and my email is AnneBurnCoaching@gmail.com.
Well, Anne Byrne, as I say, I think you're absolutely incredible. Thank you so much for coming on, and I wish you all the best with not just these groups, but with everything else that life has in store for you.
Great. Thank you so much.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.